Hey everybody, thanks for joining us on Code Chat. My name is Jeremy Foster, codefoster.com and on Twitter at Code Foster. And I'm joined today by Colin. How are you doing?
Doing well, how are you doing?
Good.
Good.
All right, I'm super excited
thanks
to talk to Colin. You're very welcome. We're gonna be talking about something that's right up your alley if you are who I expect you to be, which is a web developer in the modern age. We're gonna be talking about some web frameworks and answering the universal pain point for web developers, which is how in the world do I keep up with JavaScript technologies and what to use?
It's not easy out there right now.
Can you give us a little bit of a, what does the landscape look like for web developers right now? It's just as far as like frameworks coming out and...
Yeah, well, there's a lot. There's too many, you know? There's you know, we were talking a little bit before about frameworks, and what I like to go back to is some of the trends of that we've seen over the past few years. You know, Backbone peaked and kind of started to decline. Ember, same. The one that's been big recently is React.js, and that's the one that I'm using a lot. And you can see that React is gaining traction, and you can see here, and let's go to React. And even just a couple months ago, the only place that it was visible was SF, you know, and you can see React's getting traction abroad as well now, but still all of these are just dwarfed.
Oh my goodness, so this,
by
you
Angular.
Just brought in Angular. And this is the other ones that you have.
That's right. So Backbone, yeah. I mean, you could see Backbone, Ember, React.js, and this is search traffic. But at least there's some.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a comparison.
Yeah, yeah. How many times people are Googling looking for the APIs, maybe
right.
Things like that. And you can see there's more stories about them, right? People are. But if you look at the geographic distribution, of React. SF, Melbourne, Bangalore, Sydney, Moscow, Stockholm, New York. AngularJS is primarily in India, in Bangalore, and the takeaway here is that it's enterprise.
Okay.
There are a lot of enterprise developers who are interested in this stack, and a lot of the mobile developers and application developers historically have been going for Backbone and React because they can do mobile responsive and it's fast on phone.
Okay.
And it's small page size, small load time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so we've got a set of developers that are making that have already made a decision. They're already using
that's
a framework.
Right.
There's
that's
a little
right.
bit of momentum. They kind of need to stick with what they've got
to some
degree. But then you've got people who are greenfielding right now.
That's
they're
right.
They're starting a project right now.
That's right, and they're facing a problem, right?
Yeah.
And the problem is that Angular is undergoing a full rewrite, and they're going to break all their APIs. There was a great article a little while ago, which was. Called the problem with Angular, and I'd encourage everyone to read this if they want to wrap their heads around the issues. You know, Angular 2.0, and I've read some of the spec. Angular 2.0 looks more like React than it does Angular 1, and to me anyway. And it's in early documents, but you can see some of the same thinking. But he ends by saying, "I don't think Angular will survive the rewrite." And I think some of that has to do with what we're talking about in that. People are facing a ton of choices. They've got a framework in Angular which was put out by Google, but not used by Google.
Mm-hmm.
At least not in their flagship products. They're still used, to my knowledge, GWT on Gmail and Calendar and Docs. And so now you come to a decision. Well, okay, the front runner, or at least the place that everyone's been running. Is towards the magic that Angular brings. You know, is you don't have to keep your collections up to date. Angular will handle that for you behind the scenes. But Angular 1.4 eventually support will be dropped for that.
Would it be suicide if I was starting a project right now to start with Angular 1?
I wouldn't recommend anyone do it.
Okay, you can't. There are no like projects where you go, you know what, Angular 1 would be perfect for this starting right now.
Well, I suppose that I wouldn't do it. Probably not for most of the viewers. I suppose that if you're doing if you know it already, and you're doing a side project that you don't expect to blow up and need to scale, and
okay.
You're doing an app for around the house, you know, kind of thing. So no, I guess there's, I don't think it's a great choice. I don't think it's a great choice for enterprises, because enterprises have armies of developers, and they get them up to speed on frameworks, and
that's a real capital investment.
It's a real capital investment, yeah. And they're gonna cut, you know, they're gonna cut the API, so it's a big deal.
Now, how much of this is there are good frameworks and bad frameworks, and it's all about discovering which ones are the good ones and which ones we should use.
Totally.
There are problems, and there are tools that fit those problems.
That's right.
And it's a web developer's job to get good at at sizing up the problems and sizing up the frameworks that will fit them.
In other words, how
scoped are these frameworks?
Well, and I think that you know, when I teach a lot of web, and I always start people off with string concatenation and jQuery.
Okay.
And it's funny because there are so many, and it shows two things, I think. One, it shows how bare metal you can get with, you know, bare metal. I mean, obviously, you know, it's an interpreted language, so it's not bare metal at all. But at least with JS, like if you go down to document dot, you know, get element by ID, or you just go a couple, you know, level up from that. I mean, you've got document by get element by ID, and you can even work with that, or you can go up to jQuery. I mean, and then do this kind of imperative, you know, the DOM manipulation, and then you've got these frameworks which are, you don't handle DOM manipulation at all in React anymore, I suppose that in this case, React and Angular are so abstracted that you really have to know that you're building a single page application for them to be worth it. You don't want to pick them just to build a static website. And they're not, you know, it's way too much overhead, way too much infrastructure. So you really have to know that you're building a web application.
Even if it's performant or nearly as performant, the overhead maybe that you're talking about is the fact that I've got to learn.
That's right, Babel, ES6.
Yeah.
You know, these are technologies that, I mean, I have trouble keeping up with what's happening in ES6. There's a lot of stuff out there, and decorators now, and these are foreign even to people that have been in JS for a while. If you just need to make a button. Make a button interactive,
right,
or
button,
do a form submit. You know, just do some jQuery. You know, jQuery is still valid for developers who just need to get a page up. And it's funny, but I mean, when I'm doing a side project. Some of the stuff we're about to talk about with CSS abandoning CSS in favor of JavaScript, which is radical. Some of the stuff that we're going to talk about here, I mean. If I'm just doing a side project on a weekend, I'll do CSS in the head, you know, some jQuery and a script tab down below, and push a single HTML file up to Heroku, and it's up on the web.
It's,
you know, it's like, it's so minimal, and you can do that.
Maybe there's just a little bit of overhead in bringing out the big guns.
That's right. There is overhead. There's build. You know, so there's Gulp or Webpack or and
Yeoman.
You know, exactly, and common JS or AMD, and you face a lot of options, which eventually, to me, it seems obvious that common JS is the right choice now, and Webpack's a great choice, but to discover those things, and Webpack hasn't been out that long, and it's not totally straightforward to use, there are infrastructures, you know, it can be an extra dev who just understands the infrastructure on a big project and is going to help out. I mean, it's a lot for one developer.
Okay, so let's just say we're not working on a project for home, and we're not working on a single scrappy little web page. We're working on something significant.
Yep.
Now, first of all, check this. I tend to say that there are frameworks and there are libraries.
That's right.
And libraries are things that you might, with a little bit of work, be able to swap out.
Lodash.
Frameworks are a little bit harder to swap out.
That's
because
your
code
That's
is
right.
built on it. So we're talking about frameworks here.
That's right.
And today we're going to narrow in on two things. We're going to talk about React, which is a framework.
Yep.
And we're going to talk about Radium.
Which is a library.
And we'll go into more detail on exactly what Radium is.
Yep.
But tell us about React. What's React? Where does it fit in the market? Why is it great? Why do you love it? What?
React is special for a few reasons. I think things that I used to have to crawl into a dark closet at night, and make sure no one was talking to me, features to implement in Backbone, I can do over breakfast in React. You know, the overhead, because there are components, you're thinking in components, and you're thinking of components which capture their own state and take in.
Can you give us some sort of an analogy for a component so we know what
it's
you're
a
talking
function.
About? It's a function. Okay.
It's a function. There is no analogy
needed.
Does it
have a UI?
Just a function. So in React, a component, it embodies its markup. And if you're using CSS and JS, if you ditch CSS and use Radium, it embodies its style as well, which is stateful. You assume the styles are stateful in a web app. And and it has its logic, its functions, and its the way that it's manipulating itself internally. All of its logic is embodied in the component, and then a component can contain other components, but it's just functions. And really, you would see it looks like. If you were to desugar the JSX, you would end up with the deeply nested parens that you get in functional languages, where you functions inside of functions inside of functions. But the entire user interface is built like that.
Okay.
And functions pass data down to their children functions, and you can think of the whole thing as a tree. It's just a tree. It's a tree of components. A bunch of nested functions.
So what's the part of the older way of doing it, the more classic MVC, non-componentized way of doing it, that makes you have to go to a dark closet? What's the hard part that React seems to solve for you?
So in its state, its models, and talking to child and parent components, talking to components that are somewhere else in the app, I should say views. They're not components in MVC. They're views that are somewhere else in the app. You're not guaranteed, if you trigger a state change, really of anything in MVC. If you trigger a change in the model from the view, you have to figure out who else is listening to that model, or go wire it up. Mm-hmm. If you trigger a change event on a model, you have to go figure out what views are listening.
Okay.
And this was the best we had. It was certainly better to keep things in a model than it was to keep it in the DOM.
Yeah, right.
That's right. A non-starter for big apps. So you can't say, okay, well, the p tag with this ID has that data. So it's obviously better to go get it in the model and then render it. That's the only sane way on the client side to have a lot of people work on it, but that's not the case anymore.
So is it right for me to understand that instead of having a big state machine called my model, we now have a bunch of little state machines?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And each one encapsulates its own logic, and that gives you some guarantees. It gives you a guarantee that you're going to take in what in React it's called props, but it's just arguments. You take in arguments to that function. And every time there's a state change anywhere in the application, you're going to re-render the whole tree and fire all those functions and get new data.
So if I have a widget component and it shows up maybe in my main list here, but then over on the side I have the featured widget.
Yeah, sure.
And it's widget A.
Sure.
And widget A shows up on my list, but it also shows up on the side because it's featured. And then in my data model, widget A changes.
Yeah.
It's changing on my page in both places.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
If there's a state change, and let's just go to a text editor here, and let's say we have paragraph.
Okay, so a few minds are blown here because we've got the combination of angle braces and curly braces.
Totally. So let's say, that's right. So in a component, it's a function that owns its markup.
Okay.
So in React, this is JSX and it's gonna compile. During a build phase, so it won't. It looks like this as a convenience.
Okay.
But in React, it's React.create element P with some arguments.
Okay.
So the takeaway here is that every time any state changes, you're gonna refire all these functions, which means this is gonna get reevaluated, and the ternary will change.
It sounds heavy. It sounds like there's gonna be a performance impact if everything has to be reevaluated.
So what I've heard some of the Facebook engineers talk about, this is React was developed at Facebook, and they are using, unlike Google with Angular, Facebook is using it on mission critical infrastructure, and the way that they've talked about it is, for mobile at least, computation's pretty good. We have multi-core phones. What we don't have is a lot of memory on those phones. So if you have a lot of event listeners, rather recompute on every change and use computation rather than keep all those listeners and views in RAM.
I see.
So it's really a matter of MVC is a little bit more RAM heavy. So that's the trade-off, or the perceived trade-off.
Okay. How about Radium?
Okay. So what we haven't historically been able to do is to say,
Now, while you're working on that, I'm going to preface this with the classic advice for CSS, which is you never use inline styles.
That's right. That's been dogma for a long time. What we're suggesting with React and Radium is that, in fact, really we can modularize with common JS, and we can do something like this: require var global styles equals require global styles, and that you can have an object, and which is effectively a set of classes, all the same as you would with CSS, but mm-hmm. they just happen to be as objects in JS rather mm-hmm. than as classes in CSS.
Yeah.
One of the things that this gets you is that everything is scoped. You have, if you put a button component on there, it's clean. There's no cascade, right?
Yeah.
You don't have any less. You don't have any less. Functionality because of, well, Radium is the part that gets you the pseudos like hover and focus, and it does that with JavaScript.
Okay. But now, are you able to cascade if you'd like?
Well, there's nothing stopping you from using CSS as well.
Okay.
So if you wanted to have a style sheet.
But I mean, with the Radium nomenclature and syntax, am I able to create styles that inherit from other styles?
No, it's a feature that you don't have any cascade. You could do it with objects. You could do object.assign and have multiple objects and kind of collapse them down where the last object to be assigned the property, like property foo equals 4 pixels, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you assign an object later where it equals 10 pixels, mm-hmm. that the last one in will clobber that.
Okay. Yeah.
So you can do that where you have defaults and you override the defaults, but that's done in JavaScript and you have explicit control over that.
Yeah. Okay.
So let's say that here, let's see, var styles equals an object. Oops. And let's say margin, and let's say we call a function.
Okay.
And that's something we haven't been. You can't do margin foo to execute something, right? Mm-hmm. So let's do a ternary. Let's do the same thing. So let's say this.props.foo, or let's say bar is a separate one, and we'll say 10 pixels, and otherwise 15 pixels. And maybe it's that.
There you go.
Right. So. You probably wouldn't do sniffing.
Yeah.
That's bad practice,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But at any rate, just to give you the sense, like, let's just keep it in the abstract. You could use any computation you want. You could execute a function, and that function could be modularized, and it could make a bunch of AJAX calls to figure out what your style should be. So
yeah, right.
you have control, and that's going to be recomputed every time the application re-renders. So that's Radium. That's inline styles. What Radium does is it handles all of the edge cases that aren't handled by inline styles, like hover, focus, active, media queries, and gives you an API to. Here we go. So let me find a good example here. Yeah. So. You modularize your styles in an object, and you can just camel case instead of using dashes, and then you can add hover and focus states, and you can then recompute every time the app recomputes. You can recompute all of your styles across the app, which means, for instance, that let's say that you asynchronously require in a style sheet. Oh, I have this. Hold on, I'll grab it.
All right.
Great. Okay, so here's an example of handling. You handle a click.
Mm-hmm.
So when you do a click, it will. You know what I'll do? Actually, I'm going to copy this out into. This is much better. I'll start again. Hold on. Sorry. Okay.
Hmm. A little bit of state there, huh?
Yeah, that was actually, I think that was just like pasting in some jQuery into the head or something. Or actually, that might have been React. Let's see. This is great. Okay. So, one of the consequences of this is that you can, every time the position of this changes, you just link it to font size, for instance.
Okay.
So this is an example of the state of the application changes, all of your styles change. Here, we'll make this really small so that it's a dramatic difference, but we're going to make an AJAX request. We actually have to serve this file up. Hold on. Let's go to CD desktop. Let's see. Python. Sorry. Live demo.
It's okay. It's the way we roll.
Okay. So let me just grab this. Cool. I just need to serve my desktop so that I can.
And why are you using Python for that?
Just the easiest way? It's the easiest way. Yeah. It's like a single line, and you can and you can just go to the folder and serve it. And I've used that for years.
Yeah.
Slash foo.html. There we go. So now we can make the AJAX request.
Okay.
So we make an AJAX request and it goes out and it comes back. When it comes back, it called setState, re-rendered our application. But what was that AJAX call? Well, let's take a look at what that was. That AJAX call goes to a mock API here. And what's it have? All it is this.
Okay.
So we asynchronously loaded an object. That object had styles in it, and we recomputed our application and applied the styles to our app, which means you can take someone else's style sheet. You could have a user customize. So what we're suggesting, what suggests here is full control at any time in app lifecycle of changing anything.
Click.
Right? So pass an object into an iframe, style the iframe, take someone else's, because right now, I mean, how would you even do it, right?
Well, right now, what I've done before is I've gone all the way back to the root, the loaded CSS style sheets, and replaced the style sheets.
Totally. Yeah. So we're talking about not only just you know, being able to recompute, like, based on a slider, recomputing. This ties font size every time. So this component re-renders every time this changes, because this changes state. And so you can see that font size is very smoothly updating based on.
Now I was asking you earlier, Colin, about the difference between one-way data binding and two-way data binding.
That's
and
right.
The fact that React is one-way data binding.
It is, yeah.
Then is the two-way data binding, or rather the lack of two-way data binding, an impediment for React?
No, I think it's liberation. The reason is that you've certain guarantees about the state of your application.
Okay.
If a user's typing into a form field with two-way, you wait for them to finish typing into the view.
Okay.
When they click submit, you take all of that data, serialize it into JSON, send it to a model.
Okay.
The model then has it, right, and then updates any of the other views. With React, every time a user key presses, you're re-rendering.
Okay.
Every click, you're re-rendering. And so this is an example. I'll show you what the code looks like for this, and it's very minimal. But you can see this is our example here of typing into a form field.
Okay.
Right, and you can see that every
yeah, it's updating the label down below.
But I'll do you one better than.
Ah, I see.
Because we're re-rendering, not our state, our component state is a function of our, and we'll say 72.
Okay.
So our component state is a reflection of our form fields.
Of those two props. And basically is a React
always.
Component with
it
two
is.
Properties?
It is,
the
yeah.
The color and
is.
The size?
And actually, they're not props, they're state.
Oh,
and
okay.
So there's two things to understand in React. There's props and state, really. And that hand, it's like props come in from
users.
What's that?
From users?
No, props would come in from other functions.
Okay.
So in the tree. So you've got a tree of functions, and props come in from up the tree.
Okay.
State is let's say that you have a dropdown and you want to leave that dropdown open, even though there's other things going on.
Mm-hmm.
You have components can have state. And then application has state.
Okay.
And so you capture both those things in the tree. There's places in the tree where so long as it's in the DOM, it'll stay in that state.
Yeah.
And you can manage the state independently. And then there are parent nodes in the tree that manage the state of a bunch of children, which take in state as props.
Yeah.
So you have a way to have a breaker and say, okay, this guy has his own state.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'll briefly show you the code for that because it's very, very simple. So you basically have you get initial state, and that just gives you dark red and 14, which is what you see when it first
loads
up.
Right.
Yeah. And then when you type into, so you have an on change in the inputs. When the input changes, you fire, let's say handle color change, right? Handle color change, you say this.setState, which will re-render the component.
Okay.
And
that's a React thing.
That's
right?
A React thing. Yeah, yeah. React knows what render is, and React knows what getInitialState is. It doesn't know what these two are defined by me. And this paragraph is this.state.color and this.state.fontsize. So even when it starts, even when the component loads, it's getting that state from. It's getting its color and its font size from here.
Okay.
And then the user can change those from the form field. So this means that this is why it's nice. Your UI is downstream. Mm-hmm. There's no two way. If the UI is potentially upstream of state, mm-hmm. and then you're using the user interface to then change something in the model, your model may be downstream.
Yeah.
And if your model's downstream, that may mean your other views are downstream.
Which may mean that you need to include some logic for implications, for basically handling implications, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And really, there are some great points by Facebook engineers that you can, if you watch you'll see these come up if you watch them talk about their initial motivations. But one of the initial motivations was that MVC over time forms a graph where arbitrary many views can be listening to arbitrary many models.
Right.
And
it's a many-to-many relationship.
It is a many-to-many relationship, and that means that you can get into circles
yeah.
where a view updates a model, which updates a view, which updates a model, which updates a view, and you can end up with some odd bugs because of that many-to-many relationship.
Sure.
There's always the views are always current. And you're just guaranteed.
But
that.
In React, it's a series of one-to-many relationships.
In React, it is. In React, they're always current. Yes.
Okay.
So it's yes. Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. So exactly. We're talking about React and we're talking about Radium.
Yeah.
React, we talked about some of the decision points that developers have to make as far as should I use React, when do I use React, do I want to use React.
Yep.
What about Radium? Is it kind of a always use Radium? How do I know that Radium's going to be around in a year?
Totally. Well, we're supporting. Radium is really passionately maintained, and Radium is a library that if you decide to go down the route of inline styles, mm-hmm. and when we say inline styles, really it doesn't really matter. It's not inline styles like we know it from 1995.
Right. Yeah.
It really we're using the style attribute of a tag, an HTML tag, as almost like a compile target.
Yeah, for like all an of assembly the, language.
Yeah, for all of the computed styles are going to get applied to that style tag. It's not like you're necessarily writing them.
Well, the reason
there.
Why they said don't use inline styles is because it would turn into a nightmare to
that's
maintain.
Right.
That was the reason.
That's right. That's
you
right.
don't have to maintain them when you use Radium, right?
Yeah, that's right. You're thinking about objects. And
yeah.
you're thinking about objects in much the same way you are with classes. If you've used SAS, it's going to be very familiar. The easiest way to kind of wrap your head around how you would use Radium is to say that it is SAS, but it's SAS, rather than SAS, you've used SAS.
Yeah.
So think about the computation and functions and variables that you get with SAS.
Sure.
Rather than SAS then compiling to a static language, which then loads up in a style sheet, bring SAS onto the client. And you can keep your functions, you can keep your variables, you can change them at any time.
With SAS, I'm also learning new syntax, new
totally.
Kind of learning a new language.
It is a new language,
but with
absolutely.
Radium,
yeah, it's a new
I've got a library, but I'm writing JavaScript, right?
You're writing JavaScript. You're writing JavaScript, and it's just a library to help you manage inline styles. That's right. Because it gives you can write inline styles without Radium. It just gives you a better syntax for doing so,
okay.
for taking care of hover and focus and active and things like media queries. And here's a big one, prefixing.
Oh wow! Yeah, that's right.
Because so there's some problems that you have to solve when you go down inline styles.
And, yeah, I hate it when I'm working on a problem like prefixing where I feel like a computer can do this job. I should not be the one.
Should not be the one. In fact, right? Like, why isn't the browser doing this? Right?
Being more forgiving.
That's right. That's right. Why isn't the browser taking care of that?
Okay, so I'm pretty excited about Radium and about the idea, because I love it when the answer is just keep writing JavaScript.
That's right.
Like you've been writing.
That's right. Yes, yes.
Do it that way.
Yeah, yeah. We feel the same way, and I CSS. CSS was a language, and really, this is a radical. It's a radical departure because really, what I'm saying here is hey, CSS is cruft. It's the cascade was never a good idea.
Yeah.
It's really meant for book layouts, and it works with book layouts. You have you want everything to be this font throughout the book, and then you want everything of this type to be this font, and you want everything to be this size, and you want everything
to
this
line. But
assure
me that I can still do that with Radium.
You can. There's nothing to stop you from loading a style sheet. There's nothing to stop you from using side by side. In fact, I mean, I'll play devil's advocate a little bit. Hey, why not have something, some CSS that styles the body and styles, why not use the cascade? But really, when do you use globals? It's dangerous to use globals. Globals are not best practice, and there are. I don't know. I think there's something like Twitter Bootstrap that was really big. It's still really big. All over the place. Twitter Bootstrap uses exclamation point important all over the place in its code base. And the reason it has to do so is because of the globals.
Yeah.
And the globals in CSS in big projects just kill it. They kill what starts out as a convenience. Well, globals are a convenience, but they end up being poor practice when you end up with 10,000 line CSS files.
Do I still have to do a CSS normalize? Because if you do inline styles, the browser's still going to have kind of a default.
That's true.
Loaded,
yeah,
right?
Sure. That's a great way because it's global. Mm-hmm. Normalize is a great.
So you should still normalize and then use a combination of a little bit of CSS and maybe a lot of Radium. So tell me what if this is my. A number of CSS properties, the things that I can do with CSS. We're talking transforms and everything that CSS will do.
Yep.
Will Radium map 100% of that?
Yeah, there's no reason anything that you could do, because you can do a transform. Transforms aren't CSS, they're styles.
Right,
because anything that you can do in a style tag, you can do a transform in a style tag. Mm-hmm. You can do it applied to.
Because I noticed
style.
That you were allowing camel casing, which is a huge convenience. I love that.
Yeah, totally.
But
you're
kind of
it's required actually.
Oh, is it?
It's required in React. Yeah.
Good. Well, fine.
Yeah.
So you're mapping that to the hyphenated equivalent, right? It's not like whatever you've created the mappings
That's
for.
Right.
I can
yeah.
use. I can use all of them.
You can use all of them.
Okay.
That's right.
So border dash left. You mm-hmm. just. Let me use border left, and we're good.
Right, that's right. So you can use anything that you could use on a style tag. You can use in, and the same applies for SVG. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Well, we've been talking about frameworks. We've been talking about React and Radium, and how in the world does a JavaScript developer these days keep up with things? By the
way,
there's a great podcast out there called JS5 that I use to. It's just 5 minutes of JavaScript, and they do a really good job of like saying, oh, hey, there's this new thing. Don't know if it'll become a big thing, but it's there. Right
I really now. Like JS Weekly.
Oh, JS Weekly, good.
Yeah, and Node Weekly as well are both my go-tos for staying up with the community.
Excellent, wonderful. Yeah. So those ones as well. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up? We're actually going to have another conversation in some weeks.
Yeah, that's I look forward to it.
Okay.
Yeah. Great.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot for joining us this week on Code Chat. We'll see you next time.